Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
A predator who used his inner circle to ensnare underage girls and young men and women for decades in a sordid web of sex abuse, exploitation, and humiliation.
That's acting U.S. Attorney Jacqueline Kosoulas today after a New York jury found R&B singer R. Kelly guilty of racketeering and sex trafficking charges. Victims said Kelly manipulated and controlled them in addition to forcing them to have sex with him and others. Well, tonight we take a look at the verdict and dispel some of the myths about child sex trafficking. My guests are trial lawyer and legal analyst A. Scott Bolden and Tina Front, founder and executive director of Courtney's House, an anti-sex trafficking organization, and you, the listener. Our lines are open. I want to hear from you tonight. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. What do you think about the verdict and the R. Kelly case? You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Scott, Tina, thank you both for joining me on this really important day.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Tina, can you hear me?
I sure can. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So, Scott, let's first talk about some of the legal ramifications of this. This, you know, when we first heard about a guilty verdict, on the face of it, that may not have surprised a lot of people. But when we start to get down into the weeds of it, the first thing that we heard was racketeering, and then we heard about the Mann Act. Talk to me about that. Racketeering, why racketeering?
Well, racketeering is having an ongoing criminal enterprise over a period of time that includes a series or conspiracy and series of underlying criminal conduct. So what do I mean by that? In this case, they charge R. Kelly with racketeering because most of the federal crimes under law have a five-year statute of limitations to it. Under racketeering, if you have an ongoing criminal enterprise or conspiracy, then the statute of limitations doesn't stop at 5 years. You can go back several years because it's part of an ongoing criminal enterprise. So that was really important to the government's case. The second piece is once you charge racketeering, then underneath a racketeering, they load it up with about nine counts of violation of the Mann Act. That's illegally transporting women, usually underage women, across state lines in order to have sex with them or for them to sell their bodies as prostitutes. And as a result, this jury came back. Normally, you have to get a minimum of two of those underlying crimes in order to trigger the racketeering conviction. Here, there were 11 counts of, I think, the Mann Act, and the jury convicted him of nine of those 11 counts. The other two counts were the Federal Sex Trafficking Act, so they weren't Mann Acts, as I remember now. But as a result, this was a big win for the government. They had overwhelming evidence. They got victims to testify, men and women victims to testify, and they got others to testify about how the overall criminal enterprise of surviving R. Kelly, if you will, how it operated. And the defense, and I said this repeatedly in some of my legal commentary, I never understood what the defense was going to say in response, other than the fact that these were men and women who either earned a salary or got a lot of gifts or wanted to be in his aura or his enterprise. And that's just not good enough because many of the women were underage, which means they were victims of statutory rape. And so those crimes, you didn't really need criminal intent. They were statutory, which means if you have sex with someone 14 years old and they're not 18 or 21, then you're guilty. And so those are my initial observations of this verdict.
Yeah, and let's be clear. Yeah, there may be women now, but they were girls then.
Exactly. And whether they wanted to get into the industry or not, whether they wanted to be around R. Kelly and his entourage, or whether they wanted to sleep with him because they thought they could make money off him or get in the business with him, be honest with you, it just doesn't matter. And so I struggled with why there wasn't a plea deal in this case. I struggled with why the defendant was litigating this matter. And let's not forget, he's got another similar situated trial in Illinois. I think it's about 9 counts of similar child trafficking. And then he's got charges pending against him in the state of Minnesota, 2 charges for the same type of conduct. And so it's going to be interesting whether he litigates those other 2 cases or whether he strikes a plea deal. Because right now he's looking at up to 20 years, and on the racketeering charge itself, he could get 10 years to life. And so at some point it becomes moot if he's sentenced to the maximum by the judge in Brooklyn. So we'll have to keep a close watch on it.
Tina, talk to me about how big of a win this is in the fight against sex trafficking. Is this a cautionary tale for those who may be involved in this kind of criminal enterprise? What do you say?
Well, first I want to say thank you for the lawyer for that. Thank you for that. I do want to just clarify a couple things. Both the males and females were minors, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when it's trafficking, there's no such thing as prostitution. So that means they weren't getting any money or means. And when you go to Mann Act, that also means because they were minors, you don't have to prove any force, fraud, or trickery. So you don't have to prove any of that. And actually, there's no age of consent when it's trafficking. So you can actually go up to 18. You can go up to like 17 and say that it wasn't consensual, right? And it's not statutory because it's trafficking on a federal charge, which is the Mann Act. So just want to say that. And definitely it's a win, but, right? And I always say a win, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's a win because how far back they went on the trafficking, right? It's sad, and it's just like any other trafficking case where everybody knows what's going on, but no one says anything.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
Well, let's go back to that. So as a survivor of child sex trafficking and growing up in Chicago, Illinois, I can tell you that everyone knew R. Kelly growing up because he was at high schools and middle schools, and his brother would get girls for him. So this is something that teachers warned at Kenmore High School, and they warned students about, but said nothing. That's what I mean. And I think the other part of this, what they could have done and didn't do, we're not hearing anything about the man who bought sex from the children, both male and female children, right? We're not hearing any charges against them. So I do think it is great that they finally got R. Kelly and we got them on his charges and to follow in many states. So that's a very good thing. And what I think needs to also change is also the prosecution of the man who buys sex as well.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are taking a look at the R. Kelly verdict. He was guilty, found guilty today on all counts in his sex trafficking trial in New York City. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this case, we invite you to give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tina, did I cut you off? You were going to make another comment, I think.
Oh, no, no. You're absolutely, that's what I was going to say on that. I think that is. But you see the debates, right, still going on online about still playing his music, about why didn't other people say anything. So I think in the Black community, it sends a message, but we just got to continue sending stronger messages as well.
So this is what I want to ask you, Tina, and I'm so glad that you're here, because many months ago, and this is one of those kinds of things that really sticks with me sometimes when I do this program, where we had a conversation about child sex trafficking here in the DMV, and a caller came in and was talking about black girls being snatched off the street and forced into trafficking, prostitution, blah, blah, blah. And she was saying, that's how it is, and watch your girls. And, you know, obviously I'm not an expert in this, but I've spoken to the Tina Fronts and others who are experts in this field, and all of them say that's not how it works. Can you kind of break it down for me about, you know, the manipulation, the grooming? Can you give me the child sex trafficking 101 as to what, you know, responsible parents and adults need to be looking out for?
Thank you. Yeah, and you're right. Like, that never happens. And the thing is, most of the girls and boys that are trafficked, 72%, are African American. So that is not how it happens. It does happen as kidnapped, but just not the way people think. So let's go over this. Everything in R. Kelly's trial is exactly how trafficking happens, where he says that they're talented or whatever they're doing. So for me, it was this person grew up in foster care, right? And told me that he grew up because he told me everything that I told him. You all remember, we tell the kids all the time, right? Don't tell everybody everything and don't put it online, but they do. So they use all of this information. So they're kind to you. They buy you gifts and items. They're there for you. They're your friend. And for a long time in children talk, right? It's a matter of weeks to a month or so. It's a long time in their world. So first you have to gain someone's trust. You got to gain the family trust if it's not inside the family. And you have to be there. And then it's slow things, right? With abuse, just like with any abuse. Maybe now we get to see a little bit of their anger and you want to please that person because you don't want them to be angry. And then it becomes, you do this for this because I said so. And it becomes more controlling to the point that you don't believe anyone will believe you. And they make sure of that, all your fears, right? So pictures and videos to use against you. So that's exactly the format that he used is the format that every pimp uses.
Scott, you were going to make a comment.
Yeah, you know, I think from a social and cultural standpoint, I'm disappointed that it took this long.
Mm.
You know, in 2004 or 2008, when R. Kelly was on trial for the sex video with the minor, they were able to convince the victim not to come forward, they being R. Kelly and his entourage. Many of us believe she was paid off, and he was found not guilty. The music kept playing. And then even before that, when we knew that he had married Alaya without the details, and when she was 15, and I think he was in his early 20s or mid-20s because she got pregnant, the music continued to play on the radio and at parties, and he continued to make hits. And this is not the first time someone who was a musician, very popular, hit-making musician, he is not the only one where the public, in many respects, has given him a pass on what obviously would be disturbing and disgusting and obnoxious sexual behavior. Jerry Lee Lewis, back in the 40s or 50s, married a teenager. Elvis Presley, his first wife, was a teenager, and the public discourse gave him a pass. The record executives gave him a pass. I hope that this verdict and these other verdicts that are to come down, unless there's a plea deal, that we will take a different look, not just the black community, but the record industry, the entertainment industry, and really the public. Despite the genius of R. Kelly, we've got to hold him to the same standard and same level of accountability as we would a neighbor or a family member. And so I hope that the transformation that comes with this verdict is broad and wide and lasting.
Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jonathan calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. Turn your radio down. What's on your mind?
Yes, my name is Jonathan.
Sure.
I have a lot to say about this.
Well, you got to make it quick. Got to keep it short.
Agreement with the guy that just spoke. There are a lot of predators, manipulators, and people that are guilty of this offense. I don't just think they'll look at R. Kelly himself as a predator. I look at the parents as predators, the music industry as predators, everybody that knew about all this stuff that was going on, the people, the entourage around him, his bodyguards, his people, everybody that let all of this stuff happen. All of these people should be accused and convicted of all of this, because all of these people, when it came to money, this man, whatever he did to saturate these people or these families, to allow them to let their children go outdoors with this man and do with this man what they've done, we have to blame them as well. They should be held accountable. He shouldn't be the only one being hung and guilty. It should be everybody that was involved with these children, these families, the family members of these children, and everything.
Okay.
It's not fair. I don't agree with it. I think it's wrong. I think we have gone on this man so hard. But you know what? He did it. And if everybody knew that he was sick and had these problems like that, why the hell you let your children go with this man? Like the man said, he was almost convicted of this some years ago, and everybody gave him a pass. So they gave him a pass. Now this happened. Now everybody want to clap their hands and say he's guilty. He ain't just guilty by himself. Your mother, the mothers are guilty. The fathers are guilty. The record industry is guilty. All of them are guilty. The goddamn politicians are guilty as well.
All right. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much. I appreciate your passion. Real quick, because I want you to think about this after we take a break. Scott, I need to know, does he have a legal point? Jonathan, that angry caller, he brought up a lot of stuff. I want to thank Tina Front for joining the conversation, founder and executive director of Courtney's House. Thank you so much for your expertise in the conversation. We appreciate your time. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We continue the conversation in just a bit about the R. Kelly guilty verdict. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM in just a little bit. Teresa, calling from D.C., stay with us. You're next. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the conversation about the conviction in the sex trafficking trial of R&B superstar R. Kelly, convicted today by a New York jury. My guests are trial lawyer and legal analyst A. Scott Bolden. Also joining me now, Christine Green, legal program director with the Amara Legal Center. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phones, what do you think about what Jonathan just said, Scott? Not so much about maybe the parents, but about the people who worked for R. Kelly, who perhaps were may have been implicated or could be implicated in the racketeering conviction. Could they very well be the subject of a criminal prosecution?
Possibly, but unlikely, with lots of exceptions. So, for example, I don't disagree with the caller that socially, culturally, and personally, these people contributed to the demise of these young people, these underage women and men, or boys and girls, but only from a social or cultural standpoint or parental standpoint. Now, the individual who bribed the clerk to get a fake license or a fake ID for Aaliyah when R. Kelly married Aaliyah, I believe he has been prosecuted and he's under a plea deal. I believe that's the case. Whether if they're co-conspirators, you need an affirmative act on their part.
What does that mean?
And knowing is never enough to bring a conviction. They may have known this was going on. These other hanger-oners or staff, as well as parents, may have believed something was going on. but merely not reporting it or taking an affirmative act to stop it in and of itself usually doesn't carry any criminal exposure to it under most state laws, including federal laws. And so it's a difficult argument to make, but what the caller is getting to isn't necessarily criminal implications, but it's a social, political, and cultural commentary on where the industry is, where parents are in regard to wanting their children to be successful in the music industry, and those who are being paid by a superstar musician like R. Kelly, and what they're willing to do or not do in order to either protect him or protect his money or his real estate or his enterprise or themselves personally, because they are benefiting from R. Kelly being R. Kelly. That's a sad commentary. And while it's a persuasive argument that others ought to be criminally implicated, it's not dispositive of what the criminal justice system will do. And so when so the industry has to be cleaned up, and people working in the industry have to say something if they see something. Mm-hmm. If they don't, there will be other cases like this in the future.
Christine Green with the Amara Center. Thank you so much for Amara Legal Center. Thank you so much for joining us. Your initial reaction, of course, to today's verdict.
Yes, I have mixed reactions, to be honest with you. I think justice was done. I think it's a travesty what Mr. Kelly did to these young women. He victimized them, and as a result, their lives will never be the same. When I say mixed feelings, this happens to be a black man. This happens to be a black celebrity. Most of his victims were young black women, and I can't, in this work that I do, I feel that we can't really talk about trafficking without looking at the historical part of how this happened. And that's a whole other conversation that I know that we don't have time to get into.
No, I have a few minutes. Go ahead, speak your piece.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just speaking about trafficking, again, justice was done. This is a long time coming. I don't know why Mr. Kelly did not plead guilty early on for whatever reason, delusions or whatever. He thought that he had some sort of defense. So when I think about trafficking, specifically in the black community, and there are historical roots. This country was built on trafficking of black bodies, and so it's just from that, it's just seeped into the community on all levels. It's different. It looks different in this case because he's a man of means. He is a celebrity, but he victimized other people. At the same time, he was also a victim. No sympathy here. This is just something that I would be remiss if I didn't mention this as well. So I think when we're looking at trafficking, and you know, a lot of people think that trafficking has to be international. And I heard a little bit about what Ms. Front and Mr. Bolden were saying. And I do want to say that Tina Front is and Courtney's House is a partner of Amara Legal. So we work together, and we provide legal services to many of her clients. But I just wanted to address that part. So when I heard this today, I was not surprised at all. But I do have mixed feelings when I look at how trafficking has affected the community as a whole, all human beings, and specifically the black population.
Interesting point you're making there. Let me go to the phone lines. Teresa from D.C. Thank you so much, Teresa, for hanging on. What's on your mind?
No, I'm just saying they need to leave R. Kelly alone. That man is already locked up. I mean, they already charged him. He let that man alone.
Well, he's not charged. He's guilty now. I mean, you know, he's gone through the legal process. So today he was found guilty. So
okay, he's found guilty.
He hasn't been sentenced yet. Sentencing scheduled for May, but he is still charged in at least two other states.
Okay, well, I mean, he's already locked up. He's probably going to be charged. I'm quite sure he's going to be charged. So, I mean, I just think they need to leave him alone.
Why do you say that?
Because they do. He's already locked up. I'm quite sure he's going to be charged. He's already locked up. He's going to be charged for those charges, for those charges they got on him. I mean, just leave him alone. Let well enough be. They already let Bill Cosby out. I mean, just leave that man alone.
Okay.
He's already locked up. He's going to be charged. I'm quite sure he's going to be charged. Like I said, over and over again, he's going to be charged. I'm quite sure he's going to be charged. Or his other charges, too. Just leave him alone.
So why do you feel that way?
I just feel that way because, I mean, leave him alone. What more can you do to him? There's nothing else you can do to him. He's already locked up. What y'all going to do to him next? What can they do to him next? He's already locked up.
Okay. There's
nothing else I can do to him.
Okay. Well, Teresa, thank you so much for your comment. Let's go to Carolyn, calling from Woodbridge. Carolyn, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I watched a documentary, and if you recall, two sets of the parents allowed their under 18-year-old daughters to go there, and he was paying them. And if you recall, one of the older girls that was there, she was the niece to that youngest one. She saw her there and didn't say anything. So I'm just not in agreement with the fact that none of them are being charged as accessories. All the people that worked for him, they knew everything that was going on, and nobody did anything. Why aren't they being charged as accessories?
Anybody want to chime in on Carolyn's question? Scott?
Yeah, well, the parents, if you were going to charge the parents with parental abuse or child abuse
or neglect, maybe,
and you have they certainly weren't co-conspirators, and you have a statute of limitations that has run because they weren't part of the criminal enterprise. So these are just real tough for the parents. You're going to see more charges, I think, coming in regard to those who were his enablers and those who were on staff for him, and those who did affirmative acts to perpetuate these bad acts by R. Kelly.
Exactly. But if he was paying the parents money and they accepted it, they're co-conspirators also for allowing their daughter to go over there because everybody was looking to be a star or make money.
Yeah, but we don't know how much the parents knew or didn't know, one. And two, merely paying the parents to allow them to come over, the argument would be that there was some consideration, the payment for the kids to come over, but I doubt seriously there was some affirmative statement or public statement between the two parties that I'm going to pay you money and let your daughters come over here to have illegal sex with me. And so these cases get really hard. I'm a former sex crimes prosecutor, and they get really, really hard, and you've got a statute of limitations. So I don't disagree with you conceptually, and the case begs that, well, who else allowed this to happen? It wasn't just R. Kelly. At the same time, these are very difficult cases to prove.
Okay. Yes, exactly.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for your thoughts. So I need to go back to something that you were talking about, Scott, and this is actually a legal question, but also I still want your opinions about this, because something, occurred to me, and I know this is at least the case in the District of Columbia, and it's probably the case in Maryland, maybe even in Virginia. If you are a teacher in a public school system, or let's say you are perhaps an administrator in a public school system in the DMV, and you suspect that a teacher or a staff member is sexually abusing a student, a minor, and you do not report it, you can be charged. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. The question, the operative word is can be charged based on what they knew or didn't know and what they did and did not do. So usually in the school systems, the sexual abuse will manifest itself through other bad conduct by the student. And then the counselors at the school are trained to talk to students to figure out why they're acting the way they're acting. And a number of times on occasions, at least in the cases I handled in New York, it was the student that would break down and report the abuse. Once it's reported definitively, the school and the administrator and the teacher are not only required to act and report it to the police, but certainly if there is emotional damage or physical damage, to report it to the medical authorities as well. And so that's a long answer, but you're right about that.
So, Christine,
but whether that happens every time is that's another subject of debate, because to bring charges, you've got to be convinced you can prove criminal intent and you can prove criminal liability.
So, Chris,
that's tough because it's based on facts.
So Christine, the here's the portion for you and your work with Courtney's House, and I'm sure that you've had some interaction with survivors. And forgive my ignorance, because I'm sure a lot of people are asking or thinking about these same kind of questions. And so I need you to hold my hand and the hand of our listeners and kind of walk us through this kind of thing, because this isn't just about those who are the enablers, but this is also about the survivors. If you work for R. Kelly, hypothetically, I cannot imagine how someone who worked for R. Kelly didn't know that these horrible, I'm talking the details of these horrible things weren't going on. That's the first thing. How could you not know that these girls were being subjected to these kinds of things? And that's the first issue. The second issue is, and these are the details that I do not know. I wasn't there, obviously. Maybe I, along with a whole bunch of people who are listening right now, watched too many action movies. But I wonder, while they were being subjected to this kind of torture, this kind of abuse, that they were not able to or try to escape, to run away while this was happening. Your thoughts about that?
Yes. I would like to, can I share a little bit more about—
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Okay. So I am the legal program director for the Amara Legal Center, and we provide free, high quality, trauma informed, holistic legal services in the DMV, that's D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, mm-hmm. to anyone who's been involved in commercial sex work, and that's whether their involvement is by choice, coercion, circumstance, or necessity. Commercial sex is any sex act in which something of value is given to or received by another person. So accordingly, our clients are sex trafficking survivors and sex workers who are marginalized in society. And we are the only legal services provider in the D.C. area, in D.C., whose sole mission is to serve this population. And it was founded in 2013. And we, again, all of our services are free. So I just wanted to give that background about that's the work that we do, and all of our services are legal services. I think Tina may be in a better position to answer that question as a survivor. And I do want to also mention, I just want to highlight that we represent individuals, many who are minors. And again, as was pointed out earlier, if someone is a minor, it's automatically trafficking. There's no such thing as choice, entering mm-hmm. into right. Sex for commercial value for choice. So I wanted to just sort of share with the public what we do. And I think in terms of speaking from the question that you asked, I feel like I should defer to Tina in as a survivor, as someone who has experienced that as in the life. I think that she might be a better person to answer that question.
But she's not on with us. But
she's not on. Okay.
No, she's not here. So, which is why I asked. But
I got you. Okay.
And if you can't, okay, you can't. But
well, let me make sure I understood. You said, how can someone be in that environment and not report it, not know that it's trafficking?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The first thing is, there were two parts. If you work for R. Kelly, This has been going on for years. Mm-hmm. Years. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you work for R. Kelly, how can you not know that this, these horrible things are going on, and how can you, not, this is not the, this is not the Michael Jackson propofol situation where, Michael Jackson's taking drugs and, we're talking about lives here. The lives of, and now that I think about it, with the Michael Jackson thing, that's a whole different thing with, the children with that, which we still don't know to this day. But with this, R. Kelly was convicted today. Yes. He was convicted of sexually abusing girls, not young women, girls. And not just, and we're talking about horrible crimes against girls over a period of years. And this isn't just like, this isn't some Silence of the Lambs kind of thing where he was doing, he was just by himself. Somebody else had to know that this was happening.
Absolutely. I agree, and I'll try my best to answer your question. I have the same question. I can't imagine seeing something like that and not knowing that it's wrong. I can't stand in those shoes, but what I can say is that he there was money involved. He was paying people. From the work that we do, I have actually learned this, more about this since I've been in Amara in the last almost 2 years. This is a pervasive problem in the community, and there's not always money involved. It's generational. And again, that's why I referenced, the origins of this country were built on human trafficking, and that's labor and sex trafficking. Right now we're just talking about sex trafficking. So I can only imagine that when there is intergenerational trauma, intergenerational trafficking going on, I can't stand in those shoes. But in the work that I do, I think that sometimes people don't even, that's what they know. They don't know it's wrong. And most of our clients, it's a means of survival. I can't say that's what was happening in R. Kelly's world, but I don't know. But I did watch those programs where these young women, and they were young women, they were minors, and they were being victimized, and they didn't even know it themselves. I don't know that the couple that was on, that whose daughter didn't want anything to do with them. I mean, they were wanting to save their daughter, but their daughter, he had brainwashed them into thinking that he is doing something for them, or that he's their boyfriend or something like that. So I'm saying all that to say, I don't think there's any simplistic answer to that. This is a travesty. This is something that needs to be obliterated, but I don't think it's going to be obliterated by just looking at the latest celebrity who was finally taken down. I think if this is going to be obliterated, we have to look at it from the beginning, and we have to look at everything that's involved. So to answer your question, I'm sure there were some people there who were just depraved. They had, they had no conscience. I'm sure there were some people in there who felt that they had no choice. I'm sure there are some people in there who were greedy. I think there's no good answer. It's all a muddied pool. Mm-hmm. But I think that in order to really affect real change, we can't just stand in judgment. And again, this is something that it's horrifying. But I think standing back and just pointing the finger at is not productive. And so we hear callers like the woman who said, why don't they just leave them alone? She's seeing it from a different view, maybe a different view than you or I or any other person may see it. And so I feel like in part in the work that we do, we have to be compassionate, and we have to look at individuals as they come to us. And I think that a lot of that, and we are lawyers, I'm a lawyer, our job is just to advocate for our clients in custody cases, criminal cases, domestic violence cases, victim witness advocacy. This is what we do through a trauma-informed lens. And being part of being trauma-informed is looking at our clients and the lives and their situations holistically. And so R. Kelly's on a whole other level, but my question is it really? He's on a whole other level because of the money, but the motivation of his whatever he went through as a child, whatever the people around him went through as a child, I think we have to look at that whole picture.
I
hope that was responsive to your question.
Well, I think that was a really, you know, excellent answer, however involved. And you did make a point that I think is important when you made me remember something that came out during the documentary about surviving R. Kelly, and forgive me for not remembering the details, but I do remember that there was a point that was made about him suffering some kind of abuse when he was a child, and someone in the documentary saying that he needed to get help. And so, yes, and if that is indeed the case, that who knows, may have contributed to where we are today. But since he did not get that help, Scott, then we are where we are today, which brings me back to the point that, you know, these survivors did not know, may not have had any understanding of the kind of trauma that was being inflicted upon them. And so it is then up to, you know, the prosecutors of sex crimes, you know, the folks like yourself and the federal prosecutors of today to put a stop to this kind of thing.
Yeah, but, you know, the prosecutors can only do so much. So they've affirmatively prosecuted R. Kelly, and R. Kelly's been convicted. How much of a dent and impact will this conviction have on sexual abuse and child abuse all around this world, not just this country, and those who are perpetuating the bad acts, right, and those who have had it perpetuated on them in their various challenged communities around this country. You ask, why didn't anybody say anything?
Mm-hmm.
There's another legal term called willful blindness, fear of losing your job, fear of this life of being part of the entourage and the protectors of R. Kelly, separate and apart from the tremendously bad acts, if you will, wanting to be in the music industry. You know, these are all personal motivations. And so you can be willfully ignorant and continue and be fearful of losing your job, or it takes courage to stand up.
I was about to say the same thing.
Yep. These bad persons, these entourage and the hanger-on, but it takes courage to stand up to an R. Kelly and his criminal enterprise and say, I'm not going to be a part of it. I'm going to report it. Their personal safety might have been an issue, mm-hmm. and I'm not making any excuses for them. But the real impact that makes this case different, Harold, if you ask me, is that there were a number of young women who contracted sexual transmitted diseases from R. Kelly. He knew he had herpes simplex too. There is no cure for that. They will live with that for the rest of their life. He was being treated for it, and not only was he being treated for it, but he was being irresponsible. He was having unprotected sex with them, knowing he had this disease. And that's another felony under federal law, or under New York or Illinois law, where the whatever jurisdiction would be controlling here. And he was convicted on that. And so that makes this case even more egregious, because it connotes not only criminal intent, but willful, but just ignorance on not caring about the women and the victims around him. Not only did he abuse them and rape them, but he infected them, right? Mm-hmm. Shamed them. Mm-hmm. And I think this makes that case very different compared to some of the other cases we've seen, high-profile child abuse or Me Too movement cases.
Yeah.
Right. And can I say, I just want to add one more thing to what Mr. Bolden just said. That's all true. And what we see in our work, a lot of these individuals who are facilitating, and I say that in quotation marks, and they are facilitating the trafficking. They are, unbeknownst to themselves, they are being trafficked as well. They think that they have positions of power. They think that they're, you know, they're at the top or something, or they're bosses, but they're really being trafficked also. And that is, I don't know if that's the case in the R. Kelly case, because there was a lot more money involved than what we typically see, but we see that in our work. A lot of the people who are recruiting, the young people who are recruiting other young people, they are being trafficked themselves. And that's something that I don't think is that widely known.
Or the staff are engaged in the same conduct that R. Kelly's engaging in.
Say that again.
Exactly.
Say that again, Scott.
That the individuals who are part of his criminal enterprise, who are protecting him or who are on staff with him, they're engaging in similar conduct with the same women or other women.
Mm.
Not far-fetched, and we've seen that when I prosecuted similar cases where they're there. They're not just enablers. They're participants, too. So why would they report it?
Which goes back, I think, to the passionate statement that Jonathan made. I think that the net that needs to be cast or recast goes beyond R. Kelly. I really think that is the case. Whether they were, you know, willfully blind, or I just cannot believe that this kind of thing could go on for so long. And I'm not talking about what Tina said about what was happening in the broader community in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm talking about, and if R. Kelly is the sun, I'm talking about his Venus, his Mars, his Mercury, the people who were in his immediate orbit. How could they not know? And why aren't they facing criminal charges? It's not over. A. Scott Bolden, Christine Green. I would also want to thank Tina Front for joining this conversation as well. Thank you all. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Harold. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, September 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.